shit. No.
Don't take a picture of us.
Didn't we have a good time this summer?
Oh, it was great. We had a good summer. Went by too fast, though. Bad summer.
What I liked best about that was everybody did something different.
Oh, it was great.
Wasn't it funny?
It was funny. Yeah, you were there, weren't you? Huh? The balloon.
Everything. Everybody did different shit.
Yeah.
Les sang a song, I did a little standout, Charlie tells a joke.
Yeah. Yeah, but the only one I can think of had their mind in the gutter. Who was that? Who was the only one who had their mind in the gutter of all those?
I can't remember that one.
The most perverse story. Who did the most perverse story?
It was the least likely candidate.
No, the least likely. I never would have expected it, would you? That was great, though. It was fun. A lot of fun.
Good night, Tom.
You're
in trouble.
Good night.
Oh, okay.
We're breaking up again. Yeah. Breaking up the party, aren't
we? Is he throwing anybody out?
Yes, he is. Can we talk about your big book?
Yeah, but if I tell you clue.
No, don't tell us about it. I mean, tell us as much as you can without.
I can tell you what it's about, but I can't afford to have
leisure
right. Book knockoff.
Right. Well, don't tell us what it's about. Let's just talk about the big book. I mean, what makes a big book? What makes us different from?
I think you have to come up with a concept that nobody else has ever, hit on. And I was dealing with a lot of the Vatican infrastructure. And I came up with an idea. I told Howard about this. My agent got it a year ago. What do you think would have happened if 30 years ago there was a Vatican Secret Service? And he says, there isn't anything. Suppose there was. And suppose they stole the Shroud of Turin and they scraped some blood samples off and they cloned Christ. And he went, jeez, what a great idea.
Well, it sounds great.
Yeah.
No, it sounds,
yeah.
It's not been done before.
No, right? No, he says, oh my God, can you do that? I said, I don't know, I'll try. Mm-hmm. And 800 pages later, I said, maybe I can do it.
it's done?
Oh yeah, it's all done.
Okay.
Yeah. So, we're supposed to bring it out next year, right? I mean, I just don't want to see leisure books on it.
Okay, I do.
Great idea, though.
It is.
Yeah.
So what did you find was different in your approach to this book than
Multiple viewpoints. Get an international scope.
Right.
I mean, have you ever tried, and you realize that all of a sudden you've got to create something that's just not a narrow focus, make it an American book.
Yeah.
You've got to pick out, get that flavor of European, Catholic, Vatican. Fundamentalist Christians in America, there's all these elements that you got to consider.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, it's going to be tough, you've got about 7 different points of view that are going to eventually come together to form, the whole narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the challenge.
And this is longer than you usually
like. About 780 pages.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you've done the big ones.
Did you find that to be a challenge, tough to do?
Yeah, because I was always used to doing a book in 5 or 6 months.
Yeah.
And this thing took 18 months.
Right.
Is it ever going to get out of my life?
I do. There's a point, I think, when you get into a long book that you want it to be over. I mean, it's it's like a tar baby. You get in there and you want it to be over and it won't let you go.
Yeah, you think, is this ever going to get finished?
Yeah. But you got to stick with it. I do. You think, because there's a certain point where maybe it's the middle of a book, you say, now we're going to start going downhill and
I reached the top. And
that's right, and you start trying to wind things up.
Wrapping things
and you cannot wind everything
up.
You just won't, it will not get wound up.
Yeah,
so.
Things like Tarsite start taking over.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, geez, this happened. Mm-hmm. It's totally out of my control now.
Yeah.
I got to sit here and watch it happen. Isn't that weird?
But isn't it great that when you finally realize that not the addition or subtraction of another word it will matter, that it's all done?
Yeah.
It's a great feeling to have a book at length finally done.
Because what's the neatest part? After you're done, and you've been away from it for a little while, and you go back and you see this huge Mm-hmm. You ever have that feeling?
Yes, I do.
You ever have that feeling?
I did this?
That's right. It's like, every page is like precious to you. And all of a sudden, when you see all those pages.
I know it.
And how did this happen?
Yeah. I can't imagine working on a disc for that reason. You know, a disc, you know, some guys work on the disc.
Well, but you don't see it.
I know, you don't. You don't see it grow like that. Mm-hmm. You don't get to hold it, and you don't feel the weight.
Mm-mm.
And I think when you can see it grow.
Substance. It's like this thing.
Yeah.
This physical thing that you created.
Right. And this weight, you know, the weight's there. And
it has substance, and it's mass.
But,
it's like a miracle. And you know what's the meanest part? I mean, you gotta have. Most of my friends are writers, right? But I have people in the neighborhood that aren't, and they come by. It's like every once in a while I do this just for my own gratification. You know, you're like, cool, I wish it did. Yeah, well, this is the way it's done. And they look at it and they go, you can just tell. They look at it, and say, geez.
They have no conception.
They look at it and they think, you did what? And I'll tell you, maybe, you know, call me, strike me down for pride, but you think, yeah, I did this because I'm special. You can sell your shoes or your insurance or you can, you know, work for IBM, but this is something different, buddy.
Right. I mean, that's tough.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think a whole lot of people can stick to something like that.
I get down and I thank whatever there is. That I was able to learn it and appreciate it and do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, learn. I mean, you know, I've been at it so long now that, like, I'm basically unemployable. You know, if I had to get a job somewhere now, I don't think I could work at Dunkin' Donuts.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
Sure, absolutely. You know, I think at that point you realize that, you know, you're a
this
writer.
Is it.
You're in it for better or worse.
This is it. You know, if I'm going to be good at it or I'm going to, like, be a total failure, this is awesome.
Well, I think it's great. Yeah. So, next year?
Yeah. It's supposed to be like July or August.
Yeah.
The nice thing is St. Martin's is going to make it their big book of the year. I'm doing the ABA. I'm like trying to post it.
Oh, good. That's good. As soon as the ABA, that's good.
Yeah. Does that mean something?
That does mean something. It means it's a big book.
Yeah. Yeah. They said that weekend, don't play anything that weekend.
That's great.
So I think they're going to get behind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It sounds super.
Do that for you?
They do.
So you know
what's good. Because if they send it to the ABA, it means they have faith that it's going to do well. And you know, they want you out there meeting people.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Well, you know, over 20 years, overnight sensation, right?
Well, I mean, that's all right, though, because, you know, you got to pay your dues.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of new writers coming in who don't want to pay their dues. They don't, you know, they kind of want to get to the big book. First time out or first couple of times out. I mean, it's just not going to happen that way.
Well, it doesn't happen.
It does not happen that way.
No, it doesn't.
But
why don't they understand this? You know, they get a few good reviews and they think they've been made.
Oh, we're sorry. I
thought
they were
knocking on
the door.
Oh, no. Are we bugging you right here? Are we bothering you right here? Oh, is that okay? All right. No, so it's not gonna happen for a couple times out.
I mean, God, you know, I started out in science fiction basically. I wrote a lot of short stories in the 70s and you know, through the 80s. And you tell people, oh yeah, you know, I like published my 75 short stories. Really? And they don't know.
I didn't know that you published them.
I thought there were a ton of them. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it was science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a whole different audience.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get beyond that genre thing. You have to not worry that you haven't reached the big audience that you wanted to in the past. And you think, well, that potential is there. Like what he did in mind. You know, here's a book that a lot of people read. They've probably never read a Rock McKenna book.
Right.
But man, once you get them, and they want to read the next one.
Yeah, well, hopefully so.
Yeah.
But I think you always have to begin anew almost. You know, you have to begin from where you are. I think you can look back and say, well, I did this work and I did this craft and I did it the best I could do. And now I got to start from where I am. And it's always like a starting over.
It's always
over.
A new beginning.
It is. Yeah.
It always is a new beginning. Some writers never want, they don't want to believe that. Boy, that's a big mistake. Every time you sit down each day, You got to be better than you were the day before. Yeah. And some people don't want to say
well,
that.
Well, how much pressure do you think that puts on? How much pressure does that put on you? The feeling that you got to be better.
It really affects. What's the greatest fear? Some people say, you know, what's the greatest fear you have? And the greatest fear I've had as a writer, you know, or as you know, now that it's definitely. There's no looking back. I mean, it's the only thing I can be. It's that you're going to run out of ideas. So one day you're going to wake up and you're not going to have anything interesting to say anymore. That you're not going to have a new slant on this whole thing, you know, that reality is.
Yeah.
That all of a sudden anything you have to say is going to be all new. Mm-hmm. That's a serious fear. That all of a sudden I'm not going to have any more ideas. That I've said everything I had to say, but there isn't a B anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, if I ever came to that conclusion, I don't know what the hell I would do.
Well, so do you stockpile ideas? I mean, do you work ahead, or do you...
Oh, yeah, I like keep notes on
yeah.
it, don't you?
Yeah.
This is a little
yeah.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
I always have a bunch of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that as long as I feel that I have more things to write about, more ideas to investigate, more situations to deal with than I'll ever have time to do, I feel okay about. If I ever thought that, boy, I've got three ideas left, and after that, I don't know what I'm going to do, I would be very scared.
Well, it sounds like you agonizing over this.
Sure you do. Sure you have to agonize over it. If you're just sitting there sailing through like you think that everything's a blue sky,
but, I mean, you haven't run out of ideas.
No.
I mean, this is something you're agonizing about that's not happening.
No,
you know?
Of course not. It's not happening. But you think, what would it be like if I woke up one morning and I had nothing else to say? Haven't you ever worried about that?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, God, yeah. Sometimes it just hits you in the middle of the night, like, hey, this is what you are, and maybe you'll never have another original thought. Well, that's scary.
I think I agonize about being confined in one area, you know.
Categorized.
Yeah, that it's like, you know, you're just going to do like one book and then you do a sequel to that and a sequel to that.
Well, see, that's something that I try to deal with in a column. Like, your readers, after a while, they start to place these unspoken demands on you. That you're going to fulfill a certain formula.
Right.
That you're going to fulfill a promise that maybe you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But they want, there's a certain progression, a certain plot that they need to hear. It's like we make fun of the gothics and we make fun of the mysteries and we make fun of the science fiction stuff where the hero saves the universe. We can fall prey to the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like what Doug Winter's talking about with the anti-horror, where we've got to go beyond a simple solution where evil is presented. Evil is confronted, evil is defeated. This in itself might be a formula that we need to eventually get away from.
Yeah. Well, it is a formula.
Sure.
But it seems like the formula almost has taken over the field.
Oh, it has.
Everything is.
They want it. Our readers want this. And if we don't give it to them, what's going to happen? Are we going to get rejected? Are we going to get thrown out? Are we going to stop? Are we going to lose our readership?
Yeah.
This is a weird situation.
I know it is. It seems to have only gotten this way the last 3 or 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why that is, but...
And not everybody's aware of it, but I think it's there. I think there's these questions that we don't want to ask, and questions we don't want to get answered.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about, do we want to define ourselves as horror writers? I don't think we do.
No, I don't think so. I think it's a limited,
dead
end, really.
It's like putting a straitjacket on yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I want to do that. That's why this next book I'm doing is not a horror novel.
Yeah.
It's basically it's a thriller. It's a mainstream thing. It's a near future book. It's not. I don't know. It's not. It's certainly not a horror novel.
I think that films have had a lot to do with this problem, with the erosion of horror literature.
Yeah, the film has really hurt. When you tell somebody that you write a horror novel, what do they think? Jason.
They think of the worst of the field instead of the best.
Yeah, they immediately think
they
that that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's just pernicious, it's evil, it's so wholly wrong.
But you can't fight that. I mean, it's like, you know, you can't, since we have no control over the films, you know, we can't do anything about that.
And yet, I think all of us have created some stories that would make such wonderful films that would be non-traditional, non-genre stuff, like the Night Calls,
Green Falcon. Yeah.
What a great film this is. Mm-hmm. It's all laid out. The film is right there. And nobody's doing it. Mm-hmm. But you got it. You have an option and nobody will do it.
Right.
But this is not Freddy. This is not Jason.
Well, it's very frustrating. You know it's very frustrating.
Of course it is. Yeah, I've had stuff optioned over and over for years. And, you know, they don't share our vision.
No.
You know, you got some producer who says, well, we got to give the audience what they want. The audience doesn't know what they want. We can give them whatever we please.
And the audience is very lazy.
Yeah, they'll take whatever we give them. There's this like mythology, this mythos operating, you know, that they demand something from us, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are in control, and they just don't. They never really think what. You know, imitation is slavish imitation is the case.
Yeah, it is a shame. But you see the stuff coming out over and over again, and usually when at these conventions and the panels, when you start talking about books, eventually somebody starts talking about films, and they're not the same animal.
Well,
at all.
A film is not a book.
No, it's just not the same. But yet the film gets such promotion and such recognition, whereas you know.
Well, because it's a lot easier. It's a much more passive experience. You know, to read a book, you have to actively involve yourself to read it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's much easier for someone to sit down and watch a movie.
Yeah.
And that's where we lose a lot of the people that, you know, that we should be gaining.
Mm-hmm.
A great little story like Night Calls the Green Falcon. This is not a scary story, but it's got sentiment, it's got feeling, it's got genuine emotion. It's got human sentiment. And people want that. I mean, look, we see films, silly little movies like what was the one they the Oscar that year was Shirley MacLaine. What the hell was it?
Charlie McDermott.
You know, it took that guy 10 years to get that film made. He took that around. He shot that to every major studio there was. And they said nobody wants to know. Nobody wants to watch a movie about this.
We know the story about Driving Miss Daisy.
How long were they?
Well, you know the story about Driving Miss Daisy. They wanted the guy said, you know, he shopped around. The guy said
over and over and over.
One of the guys said, "Now we can do this if we make Eddie Murphy the driver." Did you hear this?
Are you serious?
I'm serious. If we make Eddie Murphy the driver, this will work. If we make Eddie Murphy the driver, and we have this comic repartee going between the driver and Miss Daisy, which is, otherwise it's not going to work.
Oh,
that's how close I came to getting screwed up.
See, you see what the perception is.
I do.
And they think they know what's going on. Oh, but you know, we can't fight that. We can only do what we have to do, and hope that somebody has the sense to share our vision.
Mm-hmm. And you just have to do the best you can do.
Yeah.
And everything else, you have to take care of yourself.
No, that's everything.
Yeah.
And I stopped a long time ago hoping, you know, that some film is going to save me or save you or save the whole genre, because it's not.
No.
We have to all realize the film is not the book.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's business.
That's right.
I mean, I'm sure you've had plenty of stuff optioned. Is any of it ever going to be made? You don't think so?
I have no idea. But I probably believe that if it is made, it won't be the same as the book. It won't have.
No, don't even expect
no.
The only thing is that Friedkin did it.
Oh, he did a good job. I was really fortunate.
That was
very
beautiful. And how often can you hope for
no,
that?
No, not very often.
The one before that was
lousy. The makeup thing for Dark Room was not good.
Hideous.
Yeah,
it wasn't even the same.
No, it really wasn't.
See, that's the thing. Stop trying to associate two mediums because they're
no, they're really not. I like it all.
Don't let yourself get pigeonholed.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people would say swan song with science fiction. But who cares what it was?
Really, who cares what it was? I mean, if you enjoyed it, fine. If you, and your new book. Now, what is that? What is your new book?
It could be horror, it could be supernatural, it could be science fiction.
But you hope it's going to be a good book. You hope it's going to be recognized as being a good book.
That's what you want it to be.
People think of you as the bad boy on the field.
Do they really?
Yes, they do. Don't you think they do? Don't you think they do? Because you're opinionated. You have a definite opinion about things. And you're not shy about letting people know your opinion.
Yeah, it gets me in trouble sometimes. But like, if people always know where I stand, you know? You mean my column?
Your column? No, well, more than your column. Your personality, your persona is... You say what you believe.
I'm up front.
You're up front.
Yeah.
Is this something that you've cultivated?
No, honest to God, I don't think it is something I cultivated. I think it's just something that, you know, people always knew if I liked them or I didn't like them. You know, if I was their friend, they knew I was their friend. They knew I'd go to the wall for them. You know, like there's some young artists that I really believe in that they're doing things that a lot of other artists aren't doing. And I'm, you know, if I start the small press, I want to use them.
Are you going to do this?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, I didn't know.
I'm going to do a Book of Joes. I'm going to do a Peter Strauss book. I'm going to do some Harlan's book. And there's some artists that I want to give a chance.
Can we talk? Can we do that now?
Yeah.
Can we talk about that? Is that okay?
Oh,
do you have a title for your...
Yeah, Borderlands Press.
Borderlands.
Name that after my anthology.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I'm doing the next anthology. It will be Borderlands 2, and I'm going to do it. I'm doing Joe's book, The Magic Wagon. And this is going to be a press... I'm always going to be a writer first, publisher in distance second. But I'm paying a 20% royalty because I think, you know, publishers could have been paying a 20% royalty all along.
Mm-hmm.
If I worked it all out, I did the math, and I figured out what it takes to get the book out.
Mm-hmm.
And the writer should get 20%. Not 8, mm-hmm. not 10, not 12, 20. I mean, that's where it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I want my books to look... I want to have a distinctive look to the book. I don't want to reinvent Michael Whalen. I don't want to reinvent, you know, Don Mates. I want to have a design. I want to have... See, here's a big problem. A lot of artists make this mistake, and I think it's because art directors have led them down this path. A lot of artists will take a scene from your book, from my story, or somebody else's book, and they will go to great efforts to recreate a scene or to render some literal incident that we've created.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't need to really do that, because if we've done our job as writers, a reader does the old skull cinema.
Mm-hmm.
They create that. They see the scene. They make it happen in their head.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need an artist to do that. Because a lot of times the artist doesn't do it the way we imagine it anyway. I believe what an artist's role is to be, is say, you write a book, you write a story, I write a book, I write a story. The artist, his duty, I think, is to read our work and say, what are we dealing with emotionally? What emotional or psychological response is being dealt with here?
Mm-hmm.
What is being examined? What is being explored? Take that concept and create a visual symbol for what we try to do. Not some literal rendering of a particular scene or a page, but take the emotional element or the psychological response that we strove to achieve. Create some sort of visual symbol for that. Take it to the next level. Take your art and abstract the emotional response and create a symbol or create an image that's going to add to the reading experience, not just mimic it, not just parrot back what we've already created. Yeah, but take it to another level.
That'll be tougher to do than the
yeah, but that's what art should do.
Mm-hmm.
See, and so many illustrators, so many artists, they never take it that far. Now, I love Swan Song, but when I saw what Charles and Wendy did, all they did was they took your book and they said, "Oh, here's a scene. I'm going to recreate the scene." Well, you already did that. You already made that scene. You know what I mean? I don't need to see it all over again. I don't need Charles Lang to show me, you know, what the guys look like at the crust of all of it. I've already done that in my head. I don't want Charles to do that. I don't want Charles to take what the tension, the dramatic tension, the emotional forces in flux. Give me a new image. Give me something new to think about. Create an image that I hadn't been able to create for myself. I think that's what art should
do. That will be tougher.
But that's the challenge. I mean,
have you seen this artist, what's his name? Alan...
Alan Clark. Alan Clark. This guy is a genius.
Isn't he great?
Knock me out. Knock me out. And this is where I think art's got to go. See? We don't need more Barclay Shaw and more Michael Whalen and more, you know, we've seen all that.
Mm-hmm.
No. We want stuff that, like, leaves stuff in shadow. Let the audience, let the viewer bring his own experience mm-hmm. to the piece, mm-hmm. contribute to it, and come away with something unique.
Oh, it's great stuff.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
It's great stuff. I great hadn't heard of him before. I never
blew
seen
you away, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
I got the, we both got something. I got the one that's the print know? Room. It's, well, print, but it's got this one of the animals going around the campfire.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then you got
a skeleton. It's not a skeleton.
Yeah, it's you look at it and you go, what a take. You got to make it do a take on it.
I've never purchased an art pen in my life.
Really?
Yeah, really.
And oh, Alan's definitely a talent.
Oh, he's great.
Absolutely. And see, I really think that's the direction that art has to take. Because we're giving them the cues. We're giving them the essentials.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these guys are just dropping the ball. They're saying, oh, we're just going to give you back what you already created. That's not what we want. We want you we're going to give you a starting point. Take us to another level. Mm-hmm. Anybody can draw what we told you to draw.
Well, I look forward to seeing how that's going to work out. It should be interesting.
Yeah, because I really think that's where we got to go from here. I mean, literal art is really at a dead end right now.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get any better.
Mm-hmm.
We can create a perfect image. But that's, we got to go beyond that.
Well, you might be able to say the same thing about the horror field, too.
Yeah, it's like what Doug was talking about. We got to reach to the next level. What's anti-horror going to bring us to?
Yeah.
We can't, we got to take the formula, turn it inside out, dismiss it, or turn it around. We can't, none of it. If we keep writing formula, we're going to hurt ourselves.
Well, I'm seeing a lot of formula, and you are, I'm sure you are too. It's a lot of formula stuff coming out. It's not helping anybody.
No, and we've all done it. I mean, we've all fallen prey. You know, our editors have said, hey, you can't kill this guy off. He's got to make it because he's the hero. Or, she's the sidekick, man. She's the love interest. You can't get rid of her. What do you mean I can't? You know, but they're telling you, your readers don't want you to. I don't want
to. Yeah, but you've already made the first step, though, in terms of your career.
Yeah, I have.
You decided to do something different.
Yeah, I did something totally different. I don't know if it's going to work, but my publisher is really behind it.
I think that's what you got to do. I mean, you got to do something different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I sure hope it works.
That sounds great. That sounds super. Do you have anything you want to ask him? Or is that...
when you say bad boy, what do you mean bad boy?
Oh, I mean, you know, people hear you say things and they say, oh, Jesus, that guy really pisses me off by saying that. You have a knack of pissing people off, I guess.
Yeah,
who should be pissed off?
Somebody, just to make people think. I just think that the worst sin you can ever commit is to be unmemorable, is to be utterly forgettable. I think it's okay if they really love you or they really hate you. The worst thing that can happen is they read your shit or they witness your few moments on the stage.
Yeah.
And they don't remember a thing. Or it leaves them with no impression.
Right.
It's okay if they hate you, it's okay if they love you. That's the way I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do it on purpose, but you know, I feel like I have opinions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not afraid to let them know.
Mm-hmm.
And if they like it or they don't like it, I can live with it. You know what I mean?
I think it's great.
Yeah. You know, I'm still going to sleep 8 hours, I'm still going to eat steak tonight, you know, we're going to get laid, you know. Yeah, whether they like it or not.
Maybe not in that order, but...
but
You know what I mean?
Well, no matter what they think, those things are still going to happen. Right?
Yeah.
I
know.
We got to turn this off before it's getting nasty.